I'm in the office of Dr. David Rothery, and if offices reflect minds, maybe we should just take a very tentative, gentle peek into your mind, because there's a lot going on in this office. Dave, as your friends call you.
Yes, I hope my mind's not quite as cluttered as the office is. I'm glad this is audio, not video.
We'll do the video in a minute. So, you've been all over the place recently, and is that the same horse on the wall that I recall you doing a radio interview on the back of?
I don't think I've been interviewed on the back of a horse. I've fixed up interviews while on the horse, that's for sure.
Ah, okay. That's where your reputation precedes you. Definitely some horse involvement somewhere. What's your job title?
I'm a senior lecturer in the Department of Earth and Environmental Sciences.
And recently, a byline on various TV stations and news articles has you as volcanologist. And do you see how I said that whilst holding the Star Trek hand? It's just something that comes from way, way back. But it's nothing to do with Star Trek, is it?
Well, live long and prosper.
So it is connected.
No, it's not. But I can do the hand gesture as well. A volcanologist is somebody who researches on volcanoes. And I spent a good 10 years of my life looking at volcanoes from space, monitoring how they're erupting, looking for warning signs of eruptions. And now I chair the Open University's Level 1 short course on volcanoes, earthquakes and tsunamis. So sometimes I describe myself as a volcanologist and sometimes as a planetary scientist because I also work on other planets.
Wow. Now, I guess for all the wrong reasons, you've been really busy recently. Is this because we are documenting these worldwide disasters, if that's the right word, more?
This has been quite a year for geoscience events. It began in January with the awful earthquake in Haiti, which wasn't very big but killed a lot of people. It was very shallow and destroyed Port-au-Prince. And then we had a tsunami caused by an earthquake just off the coast of Chile end of February, which made the headline news, so that was a very busy weekend. And then in the middle of April we had an earthquake in western China, which I did an interview for Chinese radio and I think local radio in the UK, and then on that same day the eruption in Iceland moved under the ice cap and caused the big ash column. And that's when things got really crazy because every volcanologist in the country suddenly came in demand. And I had a very, very busy week. And more recently, the eruption has re-intensified with the wind in the wrong direction and we've had more flight disruptions. So, yeah, it's been a very, very busy year. And for students on the Volcanoes, Earthquakes and Tsunami course, it's been great because they've had the things they're studying have all been in the news, earthquakes, tsunamis and volcanoes. So they've had a great time.
What does it take for this kind of thing to get in the news? Is it death or just general financial interruption? And I don't mean that coldly. Obviously, there's a lot of horrible victims. You know, it's terrible how, you know, what's been happening worldwide. Yet there does seem to be a focus, I see, on business.
The Icelandic eruption that's grounded a lot of flights from Europe, I think, made it into the news because of the grounding of flights, which affected a lot of people. There were a lot of people trying to get home. And then it continued to make the news because of the airline industry losing so much money in terms of compensating people and not taking in new fare-paying passengers. So that's why that news story has run and run. Things like the earthquake in Haiti hit the news because so many people were trapped in the rubble and it was such a shoddily built city. That's why it happened. And people were asking, well, why did it happen and when will it happen next? Every time there's an earthquake, the journalists interviewing me will say, when's the next one going to be? Or did that one last week, the other side of the world, cause this one? And the answer is, well, no, but they're not linked together usually. So you're right, it's when people die or are inconvenienced that it makes the news. But there are 30 volcanoes or more that erupt every year, and we very rarely hear about them.
So do we learn from any of this? All these news reports going out, all of the interviews that you get involved in, do we learn from this and say, OK, what can we do in the future?
Well, I hope we learn from it. I mean, I've learned a lot myself, having to research things I say, but I see my job of getting involved in interviews is to help the journalists and to inform the public about, you know, the truth of what's going on. I mean, there are sensationalist stories suggesting the whole of Iceland is going to erupt and we're going to have a whole string of eruptions, which is unlikely.
But just unlikely.
Well, nothing's impossible.
It's not like predicting the weather now, is it?
No, it's not like... I think weather prediction is better than volcano prediction. Look, if another volcano in Iceland is going to erupt, we'll have weeks or months warning before the eruption begins. And we could have several volcanoes in Iceland erupting at once, but it is unlikely. But it's not going to go away. The ash problem from Iceland is something we've been lucky to avoid hitherto. In terms of other events, I try to make the point that it's not earthquakes that kill people usually. It's badly designed buildings which fall down on them.
A very good point. So hopefully the disaster management people that are going out to all of these places which can fall victim to tectonic plate slippage or whatever's causing it can basically say, well, this is a problem. Take the building down and rebuild it this way, for example.
There are well-recognised codes how you build a building to make it what they call life-safe, so it doesn't just pancake down in an earthquake. And these codes are well-known, but they're not enforced. Haiti had virtually no government, so there's nobody to enforce these codes anyway. Mm. It costs 10% extra when you build something to make it earthquake-proof, and 10% is a lot of money for some people. Other parts of the world, there are codes, but they're bypassed because the constructors take a backhander from somebody, or rather the authorities take a backhander from the constructor who then builds it more cheaply. So in countries where there is corruption and bribery, the seismic codes are inadequately enforced. There's not a lot I can do about that, but I just point out that it's the buildings falling down and usually people ignoring the quite well-known building codes that's responsible for that.
Sure. Has what you've been teaching here changed in any way in the last month because of all this new information that's been coming out?
There's nothing that's happened in the world that's materially different to the examples that are already in the course, though I'm drawing out my students' attention to these events, or they're drawing my attention to them, saying, hey, here's a good link showing so-and-so, and that's great. It makes for a better community of learning. And there are certainly going to be questions in the end of course assessments about what happened in Haiti and what's happened in the Chilean tsunami. And I've yet to write this one yet, but you know, what went on in Iceland with this big volcanic eruption cloud? So it's good to have more current examples.
Definitely.
That students can get their teeth into.
I noticed you mentioned Iceland and didn't actually name the volcano.
I'm quite good at saying it, though I probably don't say it correctly. It's Eyjafjallajökull. But there are different schools of thought on how you pronounce that.
You've got a way of saying it that makes me believe you anyway, so that's fine. Do you have any interviews or talks coming up in the not-too-distant future, or is there a place that the Open University has that the general public can go to and get your opinion on what we should or should not be paying attention to?
I don't have any media interviews lined up at the moment. There's an ITN interview I did on the street outside Northampton General Hospital, which ITN put on Facebook. So people can put my... Not on Facebook, it's on YouTube. People can go to YouTube and put my name in. And there's this ITN interview, which they edited, so a car that drives behind me doesn't emerge on the other side of my body, because they cut the tape just... So I can make a car disappear behind me while talking about a volcanic eruption.
Multi-talented, definitely. Well, multi-everything, again, once again, looking around the office and seeing exactly how much work that you're involved in right now. Do you travel to any of these locations to get a close-up kind of experience?
No, I have a lot of experience working on volcanoes, including erupting volcanoes. I've been on Etna when it's been producing ash, and in Etna and Hawaii with lava eruptions.
I'd love to see your expense form for Hawaii.
Well, you can live cheaply if you try in Hawaii. But no, at the moment I'm acting as a commentator, an interpreter even for media about what's going on based on my previous experience. I'd love to be flown out to make a TV documentary about the Icelandic eruption if anybody out there in TV land that hasn't yet made their volcano documentary wants to take me out there, I'd be game to go. But no, I think with my level of experience, I can commentate on these things without actually going there. My travel at the moment is for team meetings about space missions to the planet Mercury, which is what's paying for my research time at the moment.
Right, interesting. Wow. Oh, there's so many different facets here. Fascinating talking to you. Thank you so much indeed. Is there a website or URL?
A website, a URL with me on?
relevant. Do you have a website? Do you not blog or anything like that? Oh, you really need to get you to blog. There's some fascinating stuff going on.
I've been on Twitter for about 2 or 3 weeks, but I don't use it a great deal.
Not yet. Not until people start talking to you after you announce your Twitter name now.
I don't know what my Twitter name is. It's
spoken like a true beginner.
It's my real name, I think. Oh, okay. But I do have, if people go to the Open University and go to the KEPSAR website, KEPSAR stands for Centre for Earth, Planetary Space and Astronomy Research, but the KEPSAR website at the OU, they can find me under people or personnel at KEPSAR.
Brilliant. And this audio will no doubt end up on the Open University's platform, so Google that. Not right now, wait a little bit. Unless you're listening to this in the future, in which case, Google it now, and there'll be all the links you need to Twitter accounts, to websites. David, thank you very much.
You're welcome.